the whole idea of privatizing is just an absolute joke, to be frank, because people like me who don't come from very wealthy backgrounds, who come from, you know, standard working class backgrounds from North Wales, we can't afford to go private with this sort of thing. And we also can't afford to be waiting 10 years like I did. It's messed up my entire life on multiple occasions.
Their face was out of view. They were unidentifiable.
And naturally, I couldn't just stand up and watch them doing it.
They said the waiting list could take anything from months to years.
Why do I thank people for making me feel so small?
After something like this, you spend a long time trying to find your feet and find out who you are again.
We need to care so much more about each other.
But this will only get worse if we don't act on it now, on it now, on it now.
And she actually stood by me, protecting me.
There needs to be something, someone, or all of us can help change that one way or another.
This is my story.
Welcome to Think Tank. The last episode of Think Tank was about another medical disorder. We talked about type 1 diabetes and diabulimia. I don't usually stick with the same theme, but these two episodes have an important message. In the UK, our NHS is in crisis, and I've experienced the effects of this myself. I don't blame the doctors, the nurses, or any medical professional. They work hard on the front line of care and aren't the ones responsible for budget cuts. This episode is about scoliosis, a medical condition where the spine twists and curves to the side, often becoming evident in children aged 10 to 15. Treating scoliosis depends on a person's age and the severity of the condition. It can range from painkillers to major surgery. In this episode, we hear about the prolonged painful wait for life-changing surgery, the hopes and dreams shattered by multiple cancellations, and the long road to recovery. This is Marid's story.
Hi, my name is Marid Parry. I'm a 21-year-old journalism student at Cardiff University, originally from Llanfestiniog in North Wales. I have suffered with scoliosis and hip problems my whole life. This is my story. When I was born, I was diagnosed with DDH, which is developmental dysplasia of the hip. And I'd been in and out of hospital from the age of one, really, until I was nine with that. It'd been a massive struggle with all the operations, like a massive financial stress on my family, had a lot of bullying, dealt with a lot of kind of stresses of being in and out of school. There was kind of a bit of a hindrance on my education from it, but I somehow caught up and I'm okay with that now. When I was 11, I went into the hospital for another checkup on my hip, just a standard procedure, nothing too serious. And my mum thought quickly to mention to my doctor, would you mind taking a look at Marid's back for me? Because I think I've noticed a hump of some sort on it. And the doctor, thinking, you know, I've been in hospital since I was a baby, they'd never noticed anything, and they were kind of brushing off a bit at first, but then he just kind of made me bend over quickly, and as soon as I bent over, he was like, you've got scoliosis, your daughter has scoliosis, it's obvious, I can see it straight away. From being diagnosed officially with double curve scoliosis at the age of 11, which was back in 2007, so 11 years ago now, they told me I would have to have surgery on it to correct it, the curves, once I'd gotten a little bit older. This meant having two metal rods and loads of screws put in my back, and it's a fairly large operation, so I knew I had that ahead of me. However, in the years kind of waiting up to when I was old enough to have surgery, the doctors and my parents thought we could try a number of different alternatives and kind of theories to try and correct my spine or just kind of make it a little bit better so that I wouldn't have to have the massive life-changing surgery. The first thing they made me try was a thing called the Boston Brace. And this is essentially a corset, but it's made out of really hard plastic. It's molded to your body and you get put in a cast so that it's perfectly fitted to you. And it's got some sort of, think of car seatbelt strap sort of thing across it down the back. You put it on for 23 hours a day. You have 1 hour when you're not in it, and that's just to wash. You have to sleep in it. And this was every day of the week, constantly, for months on end. I would say about maybe a year and a half, 2 years, I had this brace. And because I was going through puberty, because I had this between the ages of, say, about 12 to 14, something like that, I was growing really quickly. And by the time that one had been ordered and sent over from Boston, it was time for me to get another one. So it was a lot of struggle driving from my house in North Wales to Liverpool to get fitted and get moulded, and then having it delivered to the hospital and going to go there to pick it up as well. That, along with the checkups and the other number of things I had to check up on, such as my hip surgeries, was pretty overwhelming, and it was a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of stress. The surgery itself, they told me I was going to be having it around about the time I was doing my GCSEs, when I was about 15. So because of this, they made me take some of my GCSEs early. Just, this was kind of out of my choice, really, because I wanted to make sure that I had some of my core GCSEs done in January rather than in June, when it was around the time they said I was going to have this surgery. So I took them early. That was a lot of revision, a lot of unnecessary stress added to the last couple months of being at school. And it came to the end of my GCSEs that summer. I think it was the summer of 2012. I had had all my pre-ops, had all the checks done and stuff. And I went in a week before the time this back surgery was meant to be happening. And this was just kind of a last checkup, taking my blood, taking my measurements, making sure I was kind of fit and healthy and in a sound mind to have it. All was fine until my doctor sat me down and said, yeah, look, Meridem, I don't think we're going to be able to do the surgery after all, because we think you should have another surgery on your hip first to kind of cancel out the curves in your back and maybe help it out a bit. And they just said it so kind of blasé, so it didn't really matter. Oh yeah, by the way, you're not having this major surgery that you've worked yourself up for. Never mind. And I thought, oh no, I'm going to have to wait even more time now to get my hip done. And then after getting my hip done, I'm going to have to wait again to get the back surgery done. I knew at this point I wanted to go to university after college. And this was kind of screwing up that whole plan I had in my head of how things were going to pan out, because suddenly I didn't have enough summers and I didn't have enough time to plan around it. And I knew it was going to affect it, but I just didn't really realise at the time how much it was going to affect it. So I had to wait another year from this point, so summer 2013, between my first and second year of doing my A-levels, to have this hip operation that they'd recommended I had, which was just taking a chunk of bone out of my femur and putting a metal plate in. So this was to kind of take an inner shot of my right leg, and this in turn would somehow help to straighten my back out a little bit. So flash forward a year from then, summer 2013, so a year after they told me they would have to cancel the original back operation in favour of having another hip one, I was getting ready for this operation on my hip. We'd planned a lot ahead for this. It was, say, July 2013, and we're driving to the hospital. My mum and dad had taken 2 to 3 weeks off work. Most of it actually was unpaid. They'd booked it off. They'd sorted out babysitters, my brother and sister, because they're quite young at the time, made sure that they were all taken care of. And yeah, we got to the hospital on the day and they told us I wasn't able to have the operation because they didn't have any beds for me, which was absolutely devastating at the time, considering the effort my family had gone to. I'd mentally prepared myself for this massive operation. It wasn't just a case of turning back and going home. It was all the other kind of things that came falling down with it. This put a right little spanner in the works once again with my plan to go to uni, because if I didn't get this hip surgery in 2013, it meant I couldn't have my back surgery in 2014, which meant I wouldn't be able to go to uni. So that didn't happen. Turned out I had to wait another year to have the hip operation. That didn't happen until August 2014. It did actually happen this time, so that was obviously great to get that done, but it was kind of too late in the sense that this really affected my university plans. I had to take out a year of university because of it, and this wasn't what I wanted to do at all. I recovered pretty early on, to be fair. I had the operation in August, and I was back to my normal self by, I'd say, October, and I worked for most of that year, just getting some money together to go to university with, which I eventually went to in 2015, September. Then all was great, really, then. I had the metal from that hip surgery I just had taken out in the summer between my first and second year of university. That wasn't a big operation, so I recovered from that pretty quickly and went straight back there. And then I was told that I would be having my back surgery hopefully sometime soon. Bear in mind, this is years now. This is, what, 3-4 years after when they originally said I'd be having it done. After many, many, many different appointments and checkups and going backwards and forwards with a doctor and the appointment book and getting my name on the top of the list, I eventually settled on a date with them of the beginning of June of 2017, which was between my second and third year of university. Now, this was when the major operation, like where it all started, it was all building up to this in a way. And unfortunately, 3 days before this surgery was meant to happen, they cancelled it once again. And it wasn't really as straightforward as just cancelling the operation and rescheduling it this time, because this fell in the middle of my university degree, which is massive. I'd also moved back home to North Wales from Cardiff at this point when they'd cancelled it, because obviously it was 3 days before my operation. I'd quit my job that I had in Cardiff to come back up north and have the operation for. They'd cancelled it and told me they wouldn't really be too sure when in the summer they'd be able to get me the surgery, another one. And it was a really complicated and really stressful time, because I wasn't able to go back down to Cardiff and move all of my stuff back down there, because I'd already relocated back up to North Wales for the summer. I had quit my job there, but I also couldn't get a job in North Wales, because what if they called me into the hospital a couple of days after I got a new job? I wasn't able to kind of call when I'd get this surgery, because they didn't give me a date and they told me it could be a couple of days warning easily. And eventually they did, which was on the 23rd of July 2017, aka the day of my 21st birthday. That wasn't the news I really wanted, but I was getting the surgery, so I kind of had to roll with it and take what I could get, because that would allow me just about enough time to go back to university in time in September. So the surgery date came around, 7 days I spent in hospital, and then the week following that at home, I couldn't do anything by myself. I could barely sit up. I was crying constantly, in so much pain for a number of reasons. The painkillers were awful. You'd wake up in the middle of the night. Oh, it honestly, just thinking about it makes me so glad I've got it out of the way. The recovery process after that was pretty good. I sprung back to my normal self in about 2 weeks, and I don't mean the normal student of, you know, going out with my friends and doing fun stuff, but I was able to sit up in my bed, watch Netflix, eat food unaided, go to the toilet without the help of someone, have a shower, and all that was amazing to kind of be able to do again, especially when I got back in the car and started driving. After 6.5 weeks, I was able to drive from North Wales to Cardiff, which is a 4-hour drive, and then I got on the bus to London for an internship for a week, so soon after my surgery. And then a couple of days after that, I thought I would fly out to Oslo to see one of my friends. Going to Scandinavia was really fun, but it was very tiring. All the travelling really took it out of me. I guess at that point, mentally, I thought I was 100% back to normal married, but physically, I definitely wasn't, because once I started walking around and going to see the sights and stuff, I was absolutely shattered after about half an hour of walking. I was not in agony, but I was just so fatigued. It was more tiredness than actual pain. So up until now, it's gone pretty smooth, actually. I've not really hit any major bumps in terms of pain or in my development after the surgery. My scar has healed absolutely amazingly. You can barely see it now, and it's been about 9 months, I think, so it's healed really well in that time. I'm kind of back to almost the same amount of flexibility, funnily enough, considering I've got two huge metal rods in my spine. I still touch my toes, which is pretty amazing. And I've definitely not let it hinder me in any way. I've gone from strength to strength, in a sense, as cheesy as that sounds. But it's completely true.
Scripting this episode has been really hard. I've tried to exhibit where the NHS has been unable to give the best care to people I know, and myself included. I'm not attacking the health service. I'm trying to raise awareness for a problem, that more funding is needed. People all over the UK are in need of more, and more can be done to make the lives of young and old people so much easier with their health problems. Marid waited a long time for this operation. It caused her to put life on hold multiple times, and it's the same for Ellen in episode 2. She waited years for an insulin pump and had to rely on moving to a different postcode to get better treatment. It's the same for me. Here are Marid's thoughts.
So the NHS makes headlines quite a lot for a number of different reasons. My experience with the NHS has been kind of mixed. In terms of the treatment I've received and the way all the nurses and the doctors have been with me, they've been amazing. I couldn't have asked for better people to help me with my surgeries and my operations. But in terms of the funding and the waiting lists and that side of things that they have no control over, it's been absolutely diabolical. I've had major operations cancelled and rescheduled. It's messed up my entire life on multiple occasions. Definitely needs to improve in a number of ways. There needs to be more funding. It needs to be concentrated on. The whole idea of privatizing is just an absolute joke, to be frank, because people like me, who don't come from very wealthy backgrounds, who come from, you know, standard working class backgrounds from North Wales, we can't afford to go private with this sort of thing. And we also can't afford to be waiting 10 years like I did. I'm just lucky I wasn't really in that kind of position where it was a life or death situation with me.
Just after I recorded this story, my cousin told me that she had been diagnosed with scoliosis and was awaiting an operation the same as what Marid had. This gave me even more of a reason to showcase Marid's story. Marid had advice to anyone who has scoliosis and is awaiting an operation of this nature.
So if you're listening to this podcast and you've got scoliosis and are about to have this operation yourself, firstly, just make sure you properly mentally prepare yourself for it. It is a big operation, as I'm sure you've been told by your doctors and your family and by the internet and whatever you've read. But coming from a person who's gone through it herself, it is a massive, massive operation. And although you're going to have your family, your friends, and all the people who love you around you, just make sure that you understand fully what you're getting yourself into. It's going to be a lot of pain, but it is worth it. Secondly, make sure you don't set yourself these massive, high expectations when you come from it. For some reason, I expected my whole body to be perfect afterwards. I expected it to look amazing. And I did get myself down when I realised that the curve wasn't completely straightened afterwards. But that's as much as they can do. And it's a ginormous improvement to what it was before. And once you kind of accept that they've done the best they can and there's only a certain degree that they can correct you, you'll be a lot better. Thirdly, do not push yourself physically too hard in the first couple of weeks or months, and definitely do not try and fly to Oslo and go travelling like I did. It will not end well.
At the time this episode is being released, my cousin's operation will be next week, and I hope more than anything that it goes well and is successful. Marid is a great friend of mine, and she's been through so much with this operation, and I'm so grateful that she wanted to share her story on this podcast. Since recording this, she is now a magazine writer living and loving life in London.
More than anything, this operation, although massive, it is completely worth it, and it will change your life so much.
Think Tank Series 2 is recorded and produced by me. Music by Azir. You can find links to more music in the show notes or on our website. I'm sure you love the music in this programme just as much as I do. It made my hopes and dreams for Series 2 a reality, and I'm not just saying that. Why not listen to more of Azir's music on Bandcamp, or even buy a CD which comes with a free zine? Go to our website, thinktankpod.com/music, for more information. Rowan Lees is our Director of Sound. Joe Lovell is our Promotion Coordinator. Think Tank is a free and independent podcast supported by you, our loyal listeners on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/thinktankpodcast for more info. Join the conversation. You can find Think Tank on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or go to our website, thinktankpod.com. I'm Harry Bly. You've been listening to Think Tank.
This episode is supporting Scoliosis Association UK. For more info, go to sauk.org.uk or call 020 8964 1166 for support, advice, or just a listening ear. Thank you.